Good evening. Bienvenidos. And welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Leanne Melendez, reporter for ABC 7 Television in San Francisco, and your moderator for tonight's Wells Fargo sponsored program, Latinas in Business: Inspirational Strategies for Success. By 2050, one in four American workers is projected to be Latina. Yet members of this group are currently among the lowest paid employees with some of the fewest opportunities in the workplace. Tonight you will hear from an amazing panel of successful Latina women who will offer inspirational strategies for achievement that apply to Latinas and women in general. Now you'll hear sage advice on how to embrace one's personal assets and make the most of them. Before we officially kick off this conversation, I would like to introduce our guests. Noni Allwood, to my left, is Vice President and Senior Fellow for the Center for Talent Innovation, a highly regarded think tank dedicated to research and seeding of practices to accelerate integration of all streams of talent around the world. Noni Allwood's career spans over 20 years as an executive for Fortune 500 companies, including Cisco, Tandem Computers, and Exxon Corporation, and as a senior consultant to multiple clients in the technology, pharmaceutical, and nonprofit sectors. As a senior director at Cisco, Ms. Allwood directed the creation of a global governance framework for a partnership between Cisco and the Clinton Global Initiative on Climate Change. She has been honored with the Inspirational Immigrant Award from Upwardly Global and named one of the most influential Latinos in Silicon Valley. Ms. Allwood has a degree in industrial engineering from Universidad Centroamericana in El Salvador and completed the Stanford University School of Business Executive Program. Welcome. Aida Alvarez has been an award-winning journalist, a successful investment banker, and a member of President Clinton's cabinet. Appointed by President Clinton to head the U.S. Small Business Administration, Administrator Alvarez was the first Hispanic woman to serve in a president's cabinet. Now, she presided over record activity, $61.5 billion in guaranteed loans and venture capital financing over a four-year period. SBA's lending to women tripled, lending to minorities doubled. Administrator Alvarez also developed a global agenda, traveling internationally with the president representing U.S. small businesses. Prior to her federal service, Ms. Alvarez was vice president at the First Boston Corporation and Bear Stearns. Ms. Alvarez started out in journalism, having received a front page award at the New York Post and an Emmy nomination and an Associated Press Award for her series on the war in El Salvador. Ms. Alvarez is a graduate of Harvard University. Rose Castillo Gilbo is former Vice President of Communication and Social Responsibility and President of the Community Safety Foundation for AAA Northern California, Nevada, and Utah Insurance Exchange. She was formerly Vice President of Corporate Affairs for the California State Automobile Association, and prior to that, Director of Editorials and Public Affairs for KGO-TV, the ABC station in San Francisco, and we miss her dearly. She was named one of the 25 most influential Hispanics in the Bay Area and one of the most influential women in Bay Area business by the San Francisco Business Times. Ms. Gilbo is former chair of the Board of Governors of the Commonwealth Club of California. She is also the author of the critically acclaimed memoir, Farm Worker's Daughter, Growing Up Mexican in America, and her latest book, The Latina's Guide to Success in the Workplace, and I truly recommend it. And Sandra Hernandez, MD, is Chief Executive Officer of the San Francisco Foundation, the Community Foundation of the Bay Area. Through the generosity and vision of its donors, the San Francisco Foundation acts as a catalyst for change and granted more than $89 million in 2012 to build strong communities, foster civic leadership, and promote philanthropy. Prior to becoming CEO of the foundation, Dr. Hernandez served as the Director of Public Health for the City and County of San Francisco. She is an assistant clinical professor at UCSF School of Medicine and maintains an active practice in the AIDS clinic at San Francisco General Hospital. Dr. Hernandez is a graduate of Yale University, Tufts University School of Medicine, and the John F. Kennedy School of Government and Harvard University. Please join me in welcoming our extraordinary panelists. Well, I think my work is done here. I'll say. Anyway. Thank you very much for being here. I would like to ask each and every one of you to please fill in the blank. I'm going to ask you, today for Latinas, the main obstacle for success in the workplace is, please fill in the blank and briefly explain why. Ms. Hallwood, can I ask you first?
Yes, Latinas bring I'd like to recognize that Latinas bring special attributes and strengths to the marketplace. They have a fantastic work ethic, recognized for collaboration. They have passion. They are creative. They have great community ties, generally do work outside their job in the community, and yet they remain unrecognized. And I'd like to point to perhaps two reasons that I find their biggest obstacles. The first one is that they live in isolation from each other. Latinas tend to not connect with each other. There's a lot that separates us. We come from 26 countries, and we tend to remember that all the time as opposed to the things that make us have things in common with us. And secondly is, of course, stereotypes. There's strong stereotypes because of our language, our accent, our capabilities. Our bosses sometimes believe that it's a risk, that we are risks. And sometimes even our peer Latino executives think that we are riskier than a Caucasian counterpart. So we have some work to do in that.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Ms. Alvarez now the same question today. For Latinas, in your opinion, the main obstacle for success in the workplace or to get ahead?
I think it's really still incredibly hard for women of color to have access to positions of influence or even just opportunities. I've spent a lot of years doing, in addition to my for-profit work, if you will, involved with the Latino community in the nonprofit world. It's pretty clear to me that in the pecking order of minorities in this country, the people with the most access are white women, and then men of color. And the women of color, whether it's African American or Asian American or Hispanic American, are kind of squeezed out of the equation. That's what I've seen. There are a lot of reasons for that. Mostly having to do with stereotypes, mostly having to do with competition for the idea that there's only room for one versus this huge talent, and you know you should pick the most talented person, irrespective of whether they're a man or a woman or whatever their background is. So I agree with you. There's a lot of that we have a lot to offer. I disagree with you that we aren't talking to each other. I was just at a wonderful gathering of the Chicana Latina Foundation on Saturday with women of all ethnic backgrounds. I chair the Latino Community Foundation, with which Dr. Hernandez has been an extraordinary champion for. We have fantastic Latinos and Latinas of all backgrounds, all countries of origin, and on and on. I think the days when those barriers existed are over, for the most part. I don't think it's about us. I think it's about a bigger situation. I do think that we have the energy and the aspiration and the pent-up desire to succeed, and that we are succeeding and will succeed.
Rose?
I think that once you get into the workplace, the importance of a mentor is really one of the main things. And a lot of us don't have that opportunity to get mentorship. I remember when I was coming up, the people that I spoke with were other Latinas or Latinos, and we just kind of asked each other, what do you think? What do I do? What do you do? And it was more about what we were experiencing at the time. There weren't any people that kind of tapped you or you could go to and say, want to be my mentor. It just wasn't part of it. And I know that today a lot of the young women who've come up to me or other people are really savvy about that whole mentorship. But they're still having problems, and there's still not that many Latinas or Latinos, you know, who are in executive positions that are enough to help. And the other thing is the whole issue of sponsors. Within the corporate world, there's the area of having a sponsor that will that is different than a mentor, that will support you and will actually make something happen, or you can be chosen because you have everything that is right for leadership roles, and that they will help you get through what it needs to be done. So I think that's still a major issue in the workplace.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, one of the, if you think downstream to younger Latinas, I think one thing that people ponder is, should I do more higher education? Mm-hmm. Should I go get a master's degree? Should I apply to medical school? Should I apply to law school? And I think the getting the credentials and the schooling to do the things that are in your dream, it can be hard to find people who will say, absolutely, you should do this. And part of that is about not wanting to go in debt, not knowing what the resources are, not knowing who's going to support you when you're in those institutions. And I think there it can be quite lonely. To not be able to, you know, have a group of people who are supportive to you while you're doing that. But I over the years, many, many young Latinas who are very talented and very capable hesitate to go on and get the kinds of credentials that allow you to go into bigger leadership positions and follow their passions and their dreams. And I think today, as we think about debt, and college debt in particular, for the first time in American history, people are actually questioning whether that's good debt to go into. At a time when our demographic is coming to a place where actually we need more people to be able to go through higher ed and graduate programs and become faculty members and be in places where people can see that there are Latinos and Latinas that have gotten into those positions. So I think, you know, and it does follow on the work ethic, right? We work very hard, and working very hard in schooling to be able to have the credentials and to be able to network in professional areas where you want to work, I think is a really challenging thing at this particular time to kind of turn back that notion of, is this a good investment or not? It absolutely is a good investment.
Yeah, I think to add on to Sandra's point, I agree with what you've said. But I think there's another aspect to this as well, which is we don't have a critical mass of professionals in our community, which make it a comfortable decision and a comfortable path to follow. You know, they say that if you want to be comfortable in a board situation, it helps to have three of a kind. So if you have three women on a board, they feel more comfortable and don't feel isolated about expressing themselves and not being stereotyped as that's a woman's opinion. And I think that, I mean, that's one example, but I do think that if you grow up in a community where there are any number of professionals, friends, family, it's easier to arrive at the conclusion that it's worth your while to somehow find a way to make it happen. And I think that we're still having to contend with that.
I think all of you have mentioned stereotypes during the few last minutes or so. Rose, in your book, you mentioned that quite often people are, let's say, our bosses, people we work with, often think that Latinas are not serious about their careers. I'm just quoting from the book. Latinas are not professional in how they present themselves. Latinas lack confidence and experience to be promoted. How do we overcome those stereotypes?
Gosh. Whoa, boy. Never mind. Don't get me started.
Yeah, it's, you know, a stereotype is just that. This is a perception of things that are not necessarily true. They see one thing and then they take it into, you know, that's everybody. I remember, you know, being in a professional role and wearing a bright blue suit one day, a jacket, and somebody, one of the executives passed by and went, ooh, you know, like I was blinding him with that color. And some of us like to wear certain jewelry that are big or whatever, you know. And it's a Latina thing, they say. Oh, well, you know, the Latinas don't know how to dress. And you know, you read all the Dress for Success books, and they'll tell you, dress the role you want to be, not the role you are. So there's that, you know. And I think that sometimes, you know, the workplace, particularly the corporate workplace, is kind of countercultural to who we are. It doesn't support the cultural place we come from. So there's that tension. The things that, the way we present ourselves, so we come from a we society, a lo que Dios quiera, we say. And the Anglo society is, no, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to get it done. You know, it's an I society. So those kinds of things are different. And when they look at us, these stereotypes can arise from some of those values that we, how we come up. You know, we're more respectful. We depend on things like simpatía, which my friend here is very,
happy,
a lot of simpatía.
Yeah. I think Noni wanted to.
First of all, I'd like to, respond the issue of not as Latinos not supporting, Latinas not supporting each other. We conducted a survey last year regarding how potential sponsors will find the people that they will promote in advance. And what we found is that there's this distrust between executives of color sponsoring other employees of color. They perceive that the employee of color is a riskier proposition. The same happens the other way around. The employee of color, and this happens in Hispanics and Asians and African Americans, perceive that an executive of color has less political assets, less political power to support them. So therefore, they avoid engaging in those relationships of sponsorship because they perceive that that's, you know, that there's this distrust from both sides. So I think that, you know, when we're talking about stereotypes, it goes both ways. We need to have a critical mass also in leadership that amplifies and creates more venues for our authenticity to be able to thrive. We can't be bleached and shrunk so much that we have to adapt to a style that all of a sudden we're executives and we're not who we want to be. So it goes both ways for us to be able to not only dress the part and look the part and act the part, but also from leadership to be aware of the fact that perhaps they have a style. They've adapted and embraced a style that is very narrow.
Aida, I wanted you to just mention a story, because Aida is one of the women featured in the book, in my book, mm-hmm. and you talked about how one of your first jobs, you said, well, your employer said, well, you don't act like a Puerto Rican.
Well, you know, going to the stereotype, okay, what happens when you're 13 and you're in a Catholic school and you want to go to college and you are given a list of Catholic schools to apply to, and so you check off all the academic schools, and for the first time in 8 years, having been a straight-A student for 8 years and never having been talked to by the principal or having my parents, I'm called into the office, my mother is called into the office, and the principal says, you cannot and will not go to these academic high schools because you have to get a trade. So you will go to a commercial high school. Now, I was wearing a Catholic school uniform, no flashy earrings, okay? So, you know, you have to keep in mind that the stereotyping is not our fault. And the stereotyping happens long before you're in a corporate office. And, by the way, it's still happening, okay? So what was that other question you asked?
Remember you told me the story about you were
at
the New York Post.
Oh, yes. I was working at I had a television and a print and television news career, and I was working at one station, and I had put together a reel to take to a network affiliate. And the news director, who was the top guy who makes the decisions, had looked at the reel, and he said, well, clearly you know how to write, and clearly you know how to tell a story, but you don't look like a Puerto Rican, and you don't talk like a Puerto Rican. And I said to him, ¿y cómo hablan los puertorriqueños? And he said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, Spanish was my first language. That's how Puerto Ricans talk. Would you like me to speak to you that way? Didn't go that well.
No, I suppose not.
But you do have to call those stereotypes out, because when I was applying to medical school, I was waiting for an interview. The physician was 45 minutes late to interview me. And when he walked in, he picked up my file, he looked at me, picked up the file, he looked at me, he goes, you're a lot taller than I thought you were going to be. And I said, actually, my grandfather is 6'1". And he said, really? And, you know, we had a very bizarre conversation, and I didn't get into that medical school, but you do have to have the conversation back, right? You do have to call out the stereotypes when it's obvious and when it's there. And because otherwise they're insidious and they're, you know, it's the subtle ones that I think are actually harder than the ones that are blatant and direct to deal with.
I have to also mention that, you know, what we've been talking a lot about, Sheryl Sandberg, CEO of Facebook, and also Anne-Marie Slaughter. She wrote a great article on why women still can't have it all. But those two women have acknowledged that we need more women at the top to create change. And I think more than ever now, that's also true for Latinas. We need more Latinas at the top mm-hmm. to realize change. And here's a good question. How do you seek a mentor at the workplace? What qualities define a great mentor?
Well, let me go ahead.
No, go ahead. There's a difference between a mentor and a sponsor.
And that's from the audience, by the way.
Yeah. So a mentor is someone who encourages you, supports you, gives you advice, career advice, how do you problem solve. A mentor will generally do it out of the kindness of their heart. A sponsor is a different type of supporter, and he's the one who's going to advance your career. He's going to take his political chips and put them on the table and say, I think she can do the job. I think that person, I bet you she's good to go, and she can do more than what she's doing right now. The sponsor does it out of the kindness of his heart, but the sponsor has a lot to gain because he or she expands their circle of influence by having you now as a person that they can rely on. You're expanding their brand. You're expanding their influence. They have someone that they can trust. So finding a mentor is a lot easier. Generally, what you have to do is either through ask someone to mentor you in a specific area, and people will generally want to do that. A sponsor is more complicated because the person is your work has to be visible to the person. I can be Leanne's mentor. I cannot be her sponsor. I don't see what work she does. I don't know the people she works with. I cannot influence her next career move, but I can mentor her. So it's important to separate those two relationships.
Thank you, Noni. And Vice President and Senior Fellow of Center for Talent Innovation, I wanted to remind everybody. Rose, I wanted to ask you something. Again, Rose Castillo-Gilbo, retired president of the Community Safety Foundation and author of The Latina's Guide to Success in the Workplace. You mentioned how culture usually gets in the way of progress, and I really want to talk about that. As Latinas, many times we're stuck with trying to get ahead, but also finding that we, as Latinas, have to take care of our children, it's expected of us, and also of our parents. So how much of that gets in the way of our progress? And are we holding our daughters back?
Well, you know, the culture that we bring with us as immigrants and that our parents in particular brought with them said things like, some of the cultural scripts are things like, well, the female should be educated secondly, the brothers first. Should we really spend that much on education? You're going to get married anyway and take care of children. When you're at the workplace, some women don't want to stay late or go on trips. or network after work because they have a family to take care of, or a husband to take care of, and if he's Latino, he doesn't want you to be going around, you know, to networking events without him sometimes. You know, all those kinds of things kind of sometimes, you know, can get in our way. And certainly we have to make those decisions and be aware what's important to the career. And as Sheryl Sandberg writes in her book, is marry a man who's going to be really supportive of you and participate halfway, or a partner, you know, who's going to be very participatory and supportive of your career and of your goals. And I suspect that, and I know that all the women that I know that are very successful have that in their own lives, that they have some kind of partnership that supports that, that men that do household help, and that also, you know, take care of the kids, et cetera, in order to give that ability to their partner to succeed.
Could I move on to Aida Alvarez, former administrator, U.S. Small Business Administration, because there's a member of President Clinton's cabinet, let me remind everybody, because here's a question from the audience. What advice do you have for small and large businesses when it comes to hiring Latina women and women in general?
You know, it's a good question. For me, given the fact that I'm a very inclusive person and I believe in everybody's talent and potential until otherwise proven, I can't imagine going and prejudging people based on a stereotype. I mean, if you're in business, your number one resource, key to success, is the talent you have. Mm-hmm. And if, for example, as we become a quarter of the population of this country, if you're not going to engage that quarter of the population, if we are 51% of the children of California are Hispanic, mm-hmm. if you're not going to pay attention to the majority of kids in this state who will either make or break the state, then you're not acting in your self-interest. This is not even a charitable proposition. This is, you know, looking out for your own interest. So I would think that, and I encounter many, many executives who are totally aware of the need to be inclusive. It doesn't mean that overnight things can be transformed, companies can be transformed. But I think there is increasing awareness on the part of corporate America and just business America that we have to all work together to be successful.
Sandra, Sandra Hernandez, Chief Executive Officer of the San Francisco Foundation. Becoming a member of a board, how important is for more Latinas to get on boards, and what would be the benefits?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I mean, I think that whether it's a nonprofit board or a corporate board, I think all boardrooms recognize the value of having a diverse set of experiences, a diverse set of backgrounds, a diverse set of perspectives. And, you know, if you can go to seminars on how to be a great corporate board member, and one of the things that, you know, is being written about all the time is how important corporations now look at women, in large part because the workforce is changing demographically in many ways, including the fact that people actually want to have a more flexible work life and want to be able to take care of their aging parents and want to be home for their children's performances and the like. And the workforce is going to becoming more flexible, needs to become more flexible. And I think, so there's an advantage that I think from nonprofit boards and corporate boards to have women and to have Latinas and people from other communities. I think that the other piece of this is if you're thinking about going on a board, that you do that with an eye towards what unique perspective do you bring to that board? And recognizing that you do bring something quite unique. And conversely, making sure that you're able to learn about that governance structure and how it can be more effective in what it's trying to do, whatever its mission is. And if you're going to go on a board, make sure that your values are aligned with it, right?
And so Aida and I work very closely together in the Latino Community Foundation, and a lot of its success has been bringing the right people to that board, men and women, mostly Latinos, but not exclusively so. And really important to the mission of that organization to be able to have diversity in professions, diversity in what sectors they're working in. We have people, you know, Luis is here, he's a librarian. We have people on the corporate side. We have people coming from the nonprofit side. And so I think governance is better with greater voices. It brings great perspective, and that's going to become increasingly a competitive strength in any of the governance situations that you look at.
You were agreeing a lot.
No, absolutely. I mean, the kind of outcome that results from people with different backgrounds and experience having an exchange is just extraordinary. And it's one of the values that more leaders are increasingly seeking on their boards. It has to be deliberate choices. You can't just fall back on the old ways. But I see in the corporate boards that I serve on and the nonprofit boards that there are conscious decisions made to have public sector people, private sector people, men, women of different backgrounds on the boards. The chemistry produces a greater product.
Thank you. Here's another question from a member of the audience, and it has to do with, of course, immigration. And as you know, we've been reading a lot about immigration. And it's, I guess, also regarding education and growing as a Latina in the workplace. Isn't immigration process for Latinas a hectic and time-consuming process which hinders their achievement going forward?
Say that again.
Well, isn't the immigration process for Latinas mm-hmm. Hectic and time-consuming? I think what the issue here is you're so focused on the immigration issue mm-hmm. that perhaps you're putting aside the education and trying to get ahead.
I'd like to take that question.
Dr. Hernandez.
You know, I think... it's really important to understand that immigrants, when they leave their country of origin to come to a new country, are taking enormous risks. There is an innate sense of risk-taking, of boldness about what lays in front of you, that is quite profound in the immigrant mm-hmm. experience. And those of us who did it or who saw our grandparents do it or our parents do it, mm-hmm. really quite remarkable. Not necessarily with native language capabilities, sometimes comes with great academic backgrounds or credentials, but not always transferable. But people who leave where they come from to go someplace else are inherent risk takers. There is something quite bold and quite courageous about doing that. And in fact, if you talk to people in Mexico who talk about the plight of talent leaving their country, one of the things they say is we have no middle class because it all left to go get better opportunities with an extreme work ethic. And so I view the immigrant experience in terms of who people are as attributes of strength. Those are the kinds of things you want in the workplace. You want risk takers. You want people who are bold. Every job I've had, there was something about the job I was entirely unqualified to do. Right? But your willingness to do that comes in part from that sense of what's possible. And so I think that there are inherent values and qualities in the immigration experience that we don't fully tap in the workforce today and really should.
And another aspect to that question is why, if you're not an immigrant yourself, if you're middle class and secure, I thought part of the question was, well, aren't you sort of kind of spinning wheels, wasting time on an immigration issue when you should be focusing on career and education and the rest? Everyone is affected by the immigration issue, no matter how successful you are. You are tarred with the same brush. The demonization of immigrants that has occurred, the aliens, as they're called, which is a scary term, affects anyone who looks Latino, who has a Latino name, irrespective of where they are on the social sphere or the economic sphere. And I personally feel that we really have to take a stand on behalf of immigrants. And by the way, there will be no future, no education, if we can't give our immigrants a path to citizenship. Absolutely. That is the future. We are not going to be like other countries that deprive talented immigrants the right to be part of the social contract that unites us all.
I want to remind everybody right now that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Tonight's program on Latinas in Business is sponsored by Wells Fargo. Our panelists are Noni Allwood, Vice President and Senior Fellow, Center for Talent Innovation; Aida Alvarez, Former Administrator, U.S. Small Business Administration; Rose Castillo-Gilbo, Retired President of the Community Safety Foundation and author of The Latina's Guide to Success in the Workplace; and Sandra Hernandez, Chief Executive Officer of the San Francisco Foundation. Let me go back to Noni Allwood, again, Vice President, Senior Fellow, Center for Talent Innovation. Where are Latinas today in the workplace with regard to advancement? I think you bring good statistics.
Well, the challenge for Hispanics is that they represent about 7% of the entry. I'm talking about the white collar workers, though. About 7% of the workforce, and over time they filter to being about only 4% of the executive ranks. In contrast, let me tell you, Caucasians, for example, start to be in 66% of the entry level jobs, and they end up 77% of the executive roles. So there's obviously a filter. It's a combination of things that that tend to alienate or drop the Latino talent along the way. Of course, gender stereotypes is one. The second one is this element called executive presence, which is this sort of secret sauce. And we did some research last year about what is this executive presence that determines at some point in your career whether you have what it takes to take a leadership role. And it's a combination of gravitas, communications, and appearance. And definitely gravitas is how you build your, how you instill confidence in your abilities to lead. Communications is how you communicate you read the room, how you tell your story, and appearance is how you show up. Unfortunately, appearance is the less important, but is the first filter. And in that regard, Latinas suffer tremendously. When it comes to hairs, clothing, like Rose explained, when it comes to accent, not all accents are created equal. As we know, if you have a British accent, it sounds different from a Latino accent. Some accents are considered to be more intelligent than others. So, you have this incredible barrier for Latinos and Latinas particularly. I'm showing up late in a meeting. Oh, that's a Latino time. Expressing emotions. Oh, there you go, the Latino temper. So there's all kinds of different things. And so when you encounter a workplace that is going to be that way, you're going to eventually, everybody's going to be disillusioned, disengaged, and a lot of the Latina women will eventually become their own business owners or just simply linger in the workplace.
There's a big, Noni, I know Rose, you please. Mentioned this, that there is a big difficult time in terms of keeping Latinas in the corporate workplace. The retention issues are very, very high. That's why there's a huge group of Latinas eventually going to be entrepreneurs because the American workplace is kind of what I was talking about earlier, the whole countercultural aspect that doesn't support the woman. So retention is very, very high.
We did a study and we indicate we did a study of Latino women about in 2006 and the women that we surveyed, 34% of them were thinking of leaving. That's a huge percentage.
Well, and could I ask you why they were thinking of leaving?
Disillusionment, stereotypes. They couldn't see the ability to advance their careers. They felt that they had to compromise their authenticity, and they also felt that they had talents and capabilities that were not recognized by the company.
Okay, Noni Allwood, thank you very much. Aida Alvarez.
No, just kind of to support what you're saying. I was some years back on the board for the Deloitte Diversity Advisory Board, and one of the things that I learned was Deloitte had had for 10 years prior to their forming this Diversity Advisory Board an initiative for women, which they started when they realized that they would accept CPAs, a class of CPAs, 50-50 men and women, all of them basically with the same kind of credentials, preparations, academic achievement. And then a few years down the road, the women would leave, and they just assumed that they were leaving to have babies. Until one of the heads of HR decided to conduct a survey of women who had left and discovered that, lo and behold, they had left because they saw the writing on the wall, that there was no opportunity to be a partner at Deloitte. And so they'd gone to other opportunities and just moved on. So that very intelligent man, white man, who was the head of diversity, decided that the only thing accountants really understood was numbers and money. So he calculated what it was costing Deloitte because they invest a huge amount in training people every time they'd lose all this talent, and the number was extraordinary. That led them at the very top to realize that they were not conducting themselves in a way that was in the best interest of the company. And the top leadership, the CEOs, the chairman, the vice chair, they all decided that they were going to put their support behind a women's initiative, and now half of the partners at Deloitte are women. Mm. Okay? Where there's a will, there's a way.
That's right. So is it your understanding that typically Latinas just, when they're in the workplace, they don't, let's say, ask for a promotion, they don't push, they typically say, well, I don't know if I can do that. And is it your advice to say, push even if you don't know it and go for it?
Well, all you have to do is read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, and apparently that doesn't apply to Latinas exclusively. It seems she describes it as a universal condition of women in the workplace, and her point about leaning in is that we all have to get over it. And by the way, not just, I mean, one of the, I think, brilliant aspects of her argument is that we internalize the negativity and we defeat ourselves. And so we don't go for it because we already anticipate an outcome. Mm-hmm. And what she's urging women to do is to not to take on that sort of, those external negative self-images to themselves.
You know, I think that's great, but I think that there's a lot of companies, if you lean in, you're going to fall down.
Right.
There's nothing to lean into.
The company has to lean in.
There's different cultures, and some cultures support women being promoted and women being having access to promotions. But other cultures, there's just nothing there. And it's not always about stereotypes. It's just the way the culture is. I was listening to some speakers from, in fact, a Commonwealth Club program in Silicon Valley, a high-tech group. And the men actually were talking about, there's not a lot of positions because of the way it is. And so there, even if we wanted to, there's no place to promote them. Everything's very flat organizations. And that's a lot of the Silicon Valley organizations are now, and they're very flat, and there's nowhere to go. So I think that it's very important to know what culture you are in and to understand the culture you are in and what is possible, what you can do and what you can't do. Because you could be asking for a promotion and you can be asking for a lot. But if it's not that kind of culture, you're not going to be going anywhere. And if that's the case, then I would say move on.
I think she also mentions that women typically say, well, I don't think I can do it, but men are just much more, I think, confident and say, yeah, I can do it, is what Cheryl, I've heard her say in the past.
Yeah, that women are judged on potential and men on performance, excuse me, and men on potential.
Oh, correct. Here's a... tell my husband that one. Let's see who wants to ask this one. Could I make stereotypes work in my favor? This is a member of the audience. Can you give examples?
Can I
give a prize to whoever wants to?
I think at the end of the day, we have to embrace our differences. You know, we have to take our differences as assets. I have an accent. I have been told a trillion times I have an accent. I got tired of hiding my accent. I try to get rid of my accent. Finally, it's what it is. And I sometimes, 32 years I've been in this country, and I say things that people go like, what? I was trying to say son, S-U-N, the other day. And they were going like, your son? No, my son, up there. So my point is that, you know, you are different. I look different. I can't stop that. I will have my hands moving all the time. And I've made it, you know, you embrace it and you accept it. And you act like you own the place. You can't be apologizing for who you are forever. When I came to the States, people used to tell me, this is 1982, the Reagan years, immigration debate. We were the evil empire invading the United States. And I used to have co-workers who used to say, you know what, I was born here. So, you know, okay, fine, I wasn't. So my point is that at some point we have to stop making this be a disadvantage and just humor
it,
let it go, and celebrate it.
Well, I have a little story.
I do too, yeah.
we love stories.
From my
Aida Alvarez, please.
Okay, my husband, who's sitting in the audience, at one point I was a regulator for two major companies in Washington, D.C., and I was going to have my first meeting with each of the heads of those companies, and I decided that the way to go about it was separately, each one to invite each one to lunch, so to introduce myself. And I said to my husband, I don't know, I said, you know, I'm a Hispanic woman regulating two companies that are run by white men. And my husband said, yes, and what an advantage that is. And I said, what do you mean? He said, they know how to psych out another white guy. You will terrify them. Thank you, Ray.
That's a great story.
I think he was right, by the way.
I think so. You scored points, Ray. Anybody want
to? I just wanted to. I had an anecdote that came to mind, which, you know, goes to what Nani was saying, which is you do have to be who you are, and you have to be authentic, and you have to be comfortable in your skin. When I was director of health, I had just gotten the job, and I was hiring a CFO, and there was somebody who I thought was very capable and talented, was working in another part of the city, and I interviewed her, and I said, you know, at the end of all these interviews, I said, you know, I want to offer you the job. And she said, well, you do realize I'm pregnant. And I said, yes, I do realize you're pregnant, and I still assume you'll be a great CFO when you come off maternity leave. And, you know, again, those are ways in which, like, she was actually surprised that I was going to hire her. And so, you know, I think there is a little bit of what do we project in that. But I do think you have to be very authentic about who you are, be comfortable in your skin. And if that culture does not allow you to do what it is you want to do, you absolutely should find a culture that does.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, balancing motherhood and balancing, you know, your career. Is it harder for Latinas?
Are you
balancing
serious?
Both?
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
We have had to hold jobs, take care of families. We've forever have been doing everything.
Why is it different for us?
It's not different. I mean, I think we're out there doing it all. I can't imagine. You know, against great odds.
Yeah, I think there's stronger expectations for us within our culture to take care of the extended family, to be part of it, to go to whatever the dinners are every week. You know, there's a whole lot of ritual, you know, to being part of a Latino family, and then the kids, and then deciding how to balance all that, the differences, you know, between our own culture internally and how they go out into the world, and do we want, you know, how do we get them to keep speaking Spanish, or, you know, some of those kinds of things that other ethnic groups, I'm sure, struggle with too. But I think we're so focused on family. It's such a core part of who we are. And supporting that family and being part of it is so much more important sometimes than anything else.
I will make it an exception for immigrants. I was an immigrant. I came in with a one-year-old girl. I had no family, no relatives, no friends, nobody. That was hard. So I will say that if you are a person that is coming to this country for the first time and you are coming with family or without family, you have a steeper hill to climb than if you have the benefit of having your family, because Latino families are wonderful to each other, and I didn't have the benefit, so I'll just make that exception.
Let's move on just to briefly about something that I read here, which is mind-boggling, which is 85% of Latinas express deep reservation about their ability or knowledge to make sound investments. So you have a career, you're in your 20s or 30s. What's your advice on how to manage your money? And why aren't we doing it?
Just get advice.
How?
Gosh, you know, of course it all depends on where you live. I mean, if you reach a certain point and, I mean, frankly, I think this whole country is undereducated when it comes to managing finances. Mm-hmm. I think that very few Americans actually, I always felt that from grammar school on, children should learn about managing money. And so I think it's a shame. But if you reach a certain point and you feel at a loss, then you pick up the phone, pay a visit to a bank or to an advisor, talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about, and get it done.
You know, I do
will
think
they
that,
take us seriously?
Yeah, of course they will.
Why not?
Yeah.
Most of them are in business to talk to you anyway.
We were talking about the stereotypes. Rose.
Yeah, I just think that Latinas and Latinos often don't get the advice, don't have people available to them to advise, particularly if we come from immigrant families with, like I did, with my parents really had no concept. You know, you just save money in the bank. That's all you can possibly do. And we're not economically in a situation. I think it's all about economics. You know, you're not in a situation where you get advice from the family because you're trying to just survive from day to day. I didn't know any of that kind of information. What's a 401k? You know, the things that our companies provide for us, and who gives us that information if we don't have it? I have two daughters now, and because of my own experience, I'm able to advise them of what to do, my husband and I, but we never had that growing up. We had no concept. I remember my whole financial idea of a financial planning, I guess, was when I was in grammar school, they taught us how to take a little savings book from B of A, and then they collected it every week, and we put a dollar or whatever, and usually it comes from your parents, you know, and at the end of, when I graduated from eighth grade, I had, I don't know, $200 or whatever it was, you know. But that was great. That was great financial literacy for a school. And perhaps, as Aida said, that is the way to do it, to have more education in the school so that we all would benefit from it and not just be dependent on parents, on us having parents who are economically have the wherewithal.
Yeah, and there,
Sandra,
if I could just add, I build on that. I totally agree with that. And actually, Rose, your example is a very good one, because today there's great literature about children who have savings accounts from the time they start kindergarten are something like 7 times more likely to go to college. Mm-hmm. And those children's savings accounts come often with what Aida referenced, which is financial literacy classes. But it is a big gap. If you get into an adulthood and you've never had anybody really help you think about money, how you manage money, where you put your savings, and you suddenly get into a situation, how do you start to think about retirement when you're 30? How do you start to think about a down payment for a home when you're 30 and your early career and you haven't quite finished what you want to do in education and the like? There's classes at city colleges you can take. It is really important to understand how to leverage your savings, not just to save, right? Our parents saved, you know, my mother was waited on tables and saved quarters for the down payment for her home, mm-hmm. and would tell me that story over and over and over again. Quarters still mean a lot to me, right? But I think, you know, from the very beginning, it is really important for our children to have a sense that they have assets, financial assets that are there to help them grow their college, their career subsequent to that. And if you're at a place where you don't know, credit unions also do great programming in this area. They do it for teens. They do it for young adults. And you really ought to avail yourselves of those capabilities. Many, many employers also offer programming when the 401k provider comes in, and I tell all of the people at the foundation, all of our young staff, please make an appointment and really sit down and think about what you're putting in your 401k and how you're matching it and what kind of risk you ought to be taking. And it is a very important thing for us to build into the workplace.
Another question from our audience. What are some companies or industries that women or Latinas can lean in and find sponsors and are supportive?
Well, I think it's important to look at a company that you're considering and see how many Latinas there are in executive positions or in management positions. Because if there's not a lot, you're probably not going to be, it's going to be harder. You know, there's not a commitment there for Latinas. There are some companies that really do walk the walk and talk the talk in terms of promoting diversity and promoting the women who are in diverse positions that are leadership quality. And there are companies who just kind of give it, you know, they just kind of give it lip service. So you really have to understand and by viewing, by asking questions and seeing what those companies are and what those cultures are.
Is that something you ask, let's say, during the interview process?
Sure. That's another thing. I mean, a lot of people don't ask questions like that, like, what, you know, what is your, how many executives do you have that are people of color, women, and what is your diversity, and how do you support folks, and, you know, those kinds of questions are perfectly legitimate. You should be asking questions like that when you interview for a job.
Noni Allwood wanted to add to that.
Here's my theory. My theory is that smart companies who understand that we are a part of the society that has a buying power, and that we are going to be, we're great consumers, we're loyal customers, those are going to be far more interested in having Latino employees in their community, because we will be able to understand how to sell to those markets. I will use an example for Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo does a fantastic job. They have great representation of Latinos because they know that they're serving the Latino market. I venture to say that perhaps consumer markets will be smarter about that because they'll understand that we bring huge, huge capabilities when it comes to marketing to our community.
I want to also ask, if I can, each of you, if you could give us, or the people listening, Latinas, or what advice would you have for them to succeed in the workplace? Any stories that you might have? How is it that you got to be where you are today? And if that is something that you can extend to the people listening.
Well, I think there's some words that have been used here: mentors, sponsors, mm-hmm. cultures that are supportive, asking the right questions during an interview, which gives you a good idea about the culture of the company. Those are all important ways to know whether you want to be with that company and whether that you might have an opportunity to advance in that company.
I would say that the stories that I heard from all the successful women that I interviewed in my book, including Aida, and I know Sandra's personal story, and Noni's personal story, and Leanne, and they all have one thing in common, and that was that somebody in their family, in their world, believed in them, that was totally supportive of who they were, and also encouraged them to never forget where they came from and to be true to their own self and to their own roots. And those two things are a thread throughout all the women that are successful, because it's that confidence and that ability to be who you are, to be authentic, and to say, yo sí puedo, I'm something too. And somebody gave that to them in their own families to begin with.
I think Joseph, yo puedo is your lean in Spanish.
You have to lean into your culture, I think.
Okay. Dr. Hernandez?
Yeah, I agree with everything Rose said. I think the other thing that I would add is that, you know, assuming you have economic security, because I think for people who don't have economic security, your choices about what you do with your time are different. But for folks in the workplace, I think it is really important to do something that you love to do. I think we have a very strong work ethic. We hold ourselves to high standards, and other people, in some ways, your standards have to be higher yet. And so you really have to love what you do. And so if you're not, you know, whatever that aspiration and whatever that dream is and whatever that capability is, I think one thing that all of us in workplaces where we have the opportunity to grow and grow talent and encourage talent is to sit down with people and say, what really do you want to do? And this job may not be it. It may be this job, but you need to know where you're going and love what you're doing. Because if you're going to work hard and you're going to persist in your dream, you absolutely need to be doing something that is fulfilling to you. And I think as Latinas, it's part of being authentic. It's part of knowing who you are, that what you are doing every day is filling you back, because you will be making trade-offs all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of what work life is. But I think if you're doing something where you're getting something back because you feel really compelled by it, you're much more likely to be successful in the long run.
Noni, could you wrap it up for us quickly?
Yes, I think that some of the most successful steps in my career is when I took feedback. We need to surround ourselves with people who tell us the truth, who we are, and we need to act on that feedback, whether we like it or not, and whether the person that gave it to us maybe didn't like us so much or we didn't like them so much. So let's make sure that we don't keep ourselves isolated, and that's a huge part of making ourselves, you know, growing every day.
Good advice.
Leanne, I just want to say that on an ending note, the United States is becoming a Latino nation. Mm-hmm. It is the fastest growing country that's Spanish speaking in the world. And so it is incumbent on the United States to support and promote Latinos now, because it really can affect their global power in this world. I mean, it's a very drastic thing. So it is what I would say, it's our time. Mm-hmm. It's our time to be successful as Latinas. So, you know, let's do it, because this is our time and this is when we can do it, get it that done.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thank you very much. I want to thank our panelists, Noni Allwood, Vice President and Senior Fellow, Center for Talent Innovation, Aida Alvarez, former Administrator, U.S. Small Business Administration, member of President Clinton's cabinet, Rose Castillo Gilbo, retired president of the Community Safety Foundation and author of The Latina's Guide to Success in the Workplace, and Sandra Hernandez, chief executive officer of the San Francisco Foundation. I'm Leanne Melendez, reporter for ABC 7 Television in San Francisco. We would also like to thank our audience here and our radio, television, and the Internet. This program has been part of the Commonwealth Club series on small business success stories, sponsored by Wells Fargo. I also want to remind everyone here that the copies of the book that we talked about, Rose's book, The Latina's Guide to Success in the Workplace, are for sale in the lobby, and she will be pleased to sign it next door. Thank you very much for that. I'm Leanne Melendez, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned. Thank you. Sí podemos.